Hello and welcome to the Raptors Weekly Podcast for the week of March 12th. I'm your host, William Liu, joined on the program by an old favorite, Andrew Thompson. Andrew, how you feeling, man?
Sir, what's going on? I feel great about the Raptors and terrible about my physical well-being at the moment, but I will pull through. I've filled my body with decongestants. I've compensated for not sleeping for a day and a half, 2 days with all the caffeine. I'm ready to do this.
Jeez, what are you doing? What is this? I mean, is this safe for the pod to discuss? Like,
yeah, it's just like a bad cold. And
okay.
Sleeping. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Andrew, the Raptors are doing their best to make you feel good.
William, it's been a fun season. I think the Raptors are good at basketball.
You know what? Sometimes I look at the record and I have to like check my eyes that they're 31 games over 500.
So I saw someone post this week. It was like if the Raptors go 12-5, they could win 60 games.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing about that, it was like, oh, of course we're gonna go 12-5. Like that's just a custom now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I you know what? Like, obviously, this is the best stretch of the season. Like, the Raptors have won, like, 14 of the last 15 games. They're playing the Knicks right now as we record. Luke Kornet is killing us early on. Of course he is. But this should probably be another win. But it's just like, they're just putting together all these games where, you know, like, even if they start falling down a little bit early on, they'll come back. And, like, in the games that actually matter, like in the Wizards game and in the Rockets game, like, they're just going to come out with this, like, serious intensity, and they're really up to par with the opposition, which is, I don't know, it's a bit weird as a Raptors fan, right? Because you're, I mean, Andrew, are you waiting for the other shoe to drop?
Is there still that feeling? As a general rule in life, I'm not used to being able to have nice things.
Okay.
So, like, being a Raptors fan has always felt right to me, because it's like you'd never expect things to go. You're always waiting for something else. I think that the Raptors are going to have to do something outstanding before any of us can watch playoff games with unclenched butt cheeks.
Yeah, okay.
I'm very much not expecting the problems of the past. Like, are you waiting for Lucy to pull the football away, or where are you standing?
Yeah, that's definitely how it always feels to watch Raptors basketball. I'm with you, man. Of course, you can't watch basketball, like Raptors basketball, without thinking that might happen eventually. But, I mean, what they've done this season is tried to give fans, and probably themselves, as much confidence as possible, right? Like, you look at that Rockets win, like, that's right up there with the Celtics win, with the Cavaliers win, with the two times they played the Warriors extremely tough down in the last possession. Like, that just, it gives you confidence that, like, this year, like, things are different. And, you know, I mean, as much as that's a tired conversation to have, especially when, you know, we're 48-17, you know, from the outside, it must seem strange for Raptors fans to constantly be like, oh, is this for real or not? Like, to everyone else, it's like, this is ridiculous. You guys are 31 games over 500. But I don't know. Like, we still need these games to give us confidence. And, like, I think that's the biggest thing from the Rockets game is that, like, look, we can take the Rockets' best punch. And no one can say that the Rockets didn't give the Raptors their best punch. Not when Harden has, like, 40 points, right? Like, yeah. And the Raptors took that punch, and we won.
100%. And, like, I don't know, like, that everyone watched that game. When I say everyone, I'm talking sort of, like, from a national media perspective. Like, that was a game that everyone was paying attention to. People had circled that. There's been the broader conversation, you know, are the Raptors for real? It's not just Raptors fans who have been having this. Like, that's been sort of the main NBA narrative for the last couple of weeks now. Mm-hmm. And it seems like everyone is in agreement that the Raptors are for real. I don't mean just Raptors fans. I'm talking about national media guys are not just saying, like, of course the Raptors are real. They're saying, like, look, this conversation is silly. We've known they're real for time now.
Yeah. I think in retrospect, I think we'll look back on it and be like, yeah, of course this team is real. But at the same time, like, the history there is kind of what it is, which is unfortunate. JV, huge rebound in a crowd. JV's playing really well of late. Sorry, I'm also distracted watching this Knicks game.
Are the Knicks still a basketball team? That's a thing?
The man, the starting lineup was like Emmanuel Mudiay, Nikola Kina, Tim Hardaway, Luke Kornet started at center. Like, man. Paolo Quinn.
I forgot that they got Emmanuel Mudiay.
Yeah, he's bad. He's bad. Yeah,
he's not very good at basketball.
I thought he was going to be good.
Problematic from an NBA perspective.
I can't believe the Knicks have another bad point guard. That's never happened before.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, look, honestly, this conversation of, like, legitimacy, like, I think ultimately, like, they've done everything they can in the regular season to prove that they, you know, they're going to get there. Like, they're probably going to get to 60 wins, which is crazy to say probably. But they're definitely going to, like, shatter the 56 win mark that was set, like, 2 years ago. And I think the biggest difference with this team is just, like, the way it's set up, it's, like, it's no longer the same processes that led to the same failures, right? Like, just because these are the same Raptors, you can't just assume that everything's going to happen the same because, like, they play differently, right? And we've seen games, like in previous years, if Kyle Lowry had a bad game, we're never going to win. But we've seen the Raptors win with Kyle Lowry having, like, 5 points. We've seen the Raptors win when DeMar has, like, 5 points. Like, and, you know, we've seen the Raptors win when they get hot on offense. We've seen the Raptors win when they get great on defense. Like, they've won in all types of scenarios, which is why I think, like, it's a little bit harder to stop the Raptors this year.
And the bench isn't just, you know, Lou Williams coming off the bench and, you know, having an unexpectedly good game or a game that would be difficult to replicate in the playoffs, and then the bench bails out the starters to take a victory they might not otherwise have gotten. It's the bench just marley-whopping teams as an entire unit.
Mm-hmm.
The Raptors bench is poised to be a weapon in the playoffs in a way that we don't typically see in the playoffs.
And yeah.
Every year the conversation coming into the playoffs is like, oh, look, the game slows down, rotations change, you know, you can't play fast, and you can't play a five-man bench unit in the playoffs. There's a little bit of truth to that, like when you play teams like the Bucks or someone like that, or the Cavaliers, yeah, like LeBron's going to play 45 minutes of the game, so the whole bench unit concept changes, but I'd be really surprised if the Raptors didn't roll with their bench and just try to push the ball and punish teams in the playoffs. Like, do you see that? Do you see the way Casey's been using the bench going away in the playoffs?
No, I don't think so. And I think the idea of, like, shortening your rotation matters if you have crappy players in your rotation, but the Raptors don't, right? Nope. Like, the crappiest player in the rotation, unfortunately, is, like, Norman Powell, who's kind of come around a little bit this week. But, like, he's not even crappy. He's just inconsistent. And he's the 11th man. So if he gets cut a little bit, it's okay. And he's not ultimately hurting you that much. I think what the Raptors need to do is, like, keep that five-man unit together so that they can use it for, like, five-minute spurts where they're, like, hyperactive. Basically just a more condensed version of what the Raptors are currently doing with the bench unit. Because, like, that's going to be fine. And I don't think you need to shorten the rotation because, like, what benefit would it have to cut that down? Like, who are you taking out of the lineup? Maybe you cut down on a couple minutes from DeLon and you give it to, like, you know, Kyle Lowry, but, like, realistically, that doesn't even change that much in that context. So, I don't know, man. Plus, you know, the part of it is also, like, look, obviously the Raptors want to get to the playoffs and do well and have as much success there as possible, but there's also an eye towards, like, development. And all these young guys, they're going to be with the Raptors for a long time, and you want to give them some playoff experience in big moments. And, like, pretty much Norm is the only guy that has that right now, but we're about to give these young guys a lot of experience too. So that's a nice little benefit going forward for the future. Yeah. One thing, by the way, I was looking this up the other day. I was writing, like, the Raptors are for real column, and one of the issues was, like you said, Andrew, like, the bench is traditionally not giving the Raptors much. I looked it up and I had to check, like, four or five times in the conference semifinals. So when the Raptors played the Cavaliers and got swept.
Right.
How many total points in the series do you think Damari Carroll and Patrick Patterson had in total? Over four games.
Over four games? I mean, they're starting, too. 65 points.
No, lower.
45 points.
Lower.
Oh, man. They played all four games, too.
Yep, all four of them played. Both of them played all four games. Damari Carroll started two of the games, I think. And Patterson, I think, started one, maybe.
Oh, but 30 points.
Lower.
No.
I'll just give you the number, man. 13 points total in the whole series. Patrick Patterson had 8. Damari Carroll had 5.
Good God.
they shot a combined 4 of 22 from the field. And that's the kind of bench production we're talking about. And that's one of the other reasons why to, like, you know, believe in this team a little bit. Like, the bench is, like, worlds better than before. And I know it's not like the Raptors ever had crappy benches. We've always had good benches. Masai's been really good at finding talent in the margins. But sure, this is a very special group.
Yeah, like, I think the only thing you might see in the playoffs is, like, look, we're really not going to try to find that three-pointer for Pascal Siakam just because we believe in the potential of it.
Yeah.
It might, like, maybe we'll just swing the ball one more time in that scenario. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, like, they're getting their points in transition. They're getting their points out of genuine offense.
Right. And
yeah, like, the bench is not a mirage. The bench is not, you know, Lou Williams getting to the line 10 times off the bench somehow. It's just really good quality NBA play.
Yeah, for sure. And I think part of, you know, what makes the team harder to stop is that, like, they're just playing better team basketball. Like, the ball movement, it's been talked about ad nauseum all season, but, like, the ball movement is a lot better. And we sort of traded off, like, before, we were really relying on free throws. Like, the Raptors were always really high on free throw rate because
yeah,
DeMar and Kyle would drive to the rim and get fouled. Like, this year, they're basically just shooting a ton more threes, and they're, even though the free throw shooting is down in terms of attempts, their three-point attempts are up so much that the math evens out. And
yeah,
so, like, it's harder to stop the whole system. You know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah, the true shooting percentage is actually higher than it has been traditionally, and that's
right
for the loss in free throws. And I think that's also probably reflected in the health of the team a certain extent as well, that, mm-hmm, you know, it probably bodes well for Kyle Lowry that he's not barreling to the rim in order to try to bail the Raptors out of games on the road in Detroit 8 times.
Yeah.
Like that, having Kyle Lowry through the playoffs is probably a bigger impact. Is one of the bigger benefits of the bench playing this way and the team changing the style of play as well. I mean, knock on wood here, there's still enough games for that to happen, but I mean, Kyle Lowry has not had a legitimately healthy run through the playoffs in the entire time he's been here.
Yeah, for sure. Did you have any concern, though, before the Rockets game, or maybe even before the Pistons game, because I thought Lowry was instrumental in that game, too, but did you have any concerns that, like, Lowry might have slipped off a little bit? You know what I mean? Like, dropped off a level?
Like his three-point shooting has been good. I think I haven't been concerned just because of the position he plays. Like, with point guards, a lot of times you'll see these guys do this, like top-end point guards will sort of spend like 3 quarters letting the rest of the team sort of get in place and try to make sure everything happens for everyone else. Like that's very much a part of that position is getting your teammates going and letting them be the ones to carry you, and that's sort of your job as the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's out of character for Kyle Lowry. I think it was more surprising over the last couple of years for other people to see him suddenly become the focal point of an offense from a scoring perspective.
Right.
And he doesn't seem uncomfortable going back to, all right, like, I'll stay in my lane. I will be very good at what I do. And if the team needs something, I'm there to do it. But, you know, I think winning is as important or probably more important than scoring 25 for him. So I think because he doesn't look uncomfortable in the way the team's using him and he doesn't seem upset at all, I've been fine with it because I think winning matters more to him. And I think that's really kind of been the focal point of the change here. And mm-hmm, probably been a part of that on the inside, not the other way around.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, look, there's definitely been a lot more buy-in with Lowry, which I think is easier to do when you give him like the contract, right? Like, you're like, look, you no longer have to like try to like kill yourself for any money. Like, here's $30 million a year. You probably deserve like 25 of that. And plus, you've been doing so well for us in previous seasons. We got to keep you and everything like that. So, like, he doesn't have to worry about any of that, you know, ulterior stuff. So he doesn't need to get, like, you know, like you said, kill himself multiple times a year, you know, trying to kill the Pistons or whatever as the focal point on the offense. But I do like the reassurance that he can take over when it's necessary.
For sure.
Right? And that, like, that Pistons game this week, him in the third quarter of that game, when he had 2 4-point plays, he drove like underneath the basket, went baseline and got an and one over Andre Drummond, and he was like throwing all these passes for threes. Like, that's the kind of Kyle Lowry that's like take over, change a game. All of a sudden, you know, the deficit goes into like a lead, and then you go from that game over to the Rockets game where Kyle Lowry, that was probably his best game of the season, it's just nice and reassuring to know that, you know, you have two guys. Because I have full confidence that DeMar can bail the Raptors out, like he's done it so many times this season. But to see Kyle also step up and do that, while also, you know, just keeping the team running, like the whole team has been playing this team-oriented system. A lot of that is Lowry giving up the ball. It's just encouraging to see. I mean, what did you see out of Lowry this week in terms of that Pistons game and that Rockets game specifically?
Sure, like the Rockets game, he was a beast. Like that's it's worth noting that the Raptors beat a team that had won, was 17 straight and is placed in the league and is on pace to be a record-setting offense. And Kyle Lowry was, I think, unquestionably the best player in that game. Like he was outstanding on both ends of the floor. He carried the Raptors through a stretch where the offense stopped clicking a little bit. He was just fearless in the 3-point shots he was putting up. Like that was, he was putting up very Houston style threes and just like, I have an inch of space. The offense is moving. I'm not set. Here it is. He was guarding the pick and roll extremely well, helping to push the pace of the team. Like I don't see how anyone can not look at that game and think Kyle Lowry is still an all NBA style player. We're seeing regression from a statistical perspective this year. I don't think we've seen the regression of Kyle Lowry in any way or form this year. Just the way he's being utilized in the offense is different, and that means that his counting stats aren't as high, but I don't think his quality of play has slipped in any noticeable way at all this year.
Yeah, for sure. I think part of it also what's happening is just like the team kind of reoriented itself away from like Lowry's number one along with DeRozan to just DeRozan's number one and Lowry's number two.
Yep.
And I think this makes more sense. Like, I think in many ways Lowry is still a better player than DeRozan. I don't think it's like defensively or you know, even playmaking. Like, I think Lowry's better. But like, DeMar has improved so much as a scorer and also as a distributor that like he's just a more natural number one option for your, you know, for your offense, because he's just a natural scorer. And like when you have a guy who can score and get his buckets anytime, it's just easy to play off of that. And
yep.
I think the Raptors have finally found a balance to the offense that works best.
Yeah, and the defense has to bend around DeRozan more. They have to bring help to stop him from scoring in a way that they didn't necessarily have to do if Lowry's going to be the one to get that bucket. A lot of the times in traditional playoff series when the Raptors have failed, you're seeing Lowry trying to do everything himself, and they don't have to change the way they play defense to do that. They've just got someone a little bit bigger and athletic enough to guard him. And when he gets to the rim, there's just too many bodies and they're not getting the foul calls. And look, like you've talked about, DeMar is just such an out of this world scorer, and the way he has extended his range and improved his playmaking has made it so you have to guard him with multiple people or he's going to score. And, you know, we saw in Detroit, that means two things. Either A, he's just going to dunk on your face in your family line, or you're going to have to sell out completely to stop him from, you know, ruining the rest of everyone you know, and he's going to kick it out for a wide open shot to someone else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's worth noting, like you said, not only have the Raptors got a much more team-oriented scoring focus this year, but it's been a clear shift from co-number ones or Lowry's team to DeMar DeRozan as the focal point.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, whoa. Stephon Marbury is at this game. Dapping it up with Kyle Lowry. Jeez, the things you see in New York, man. Stephon Marbury is wearing all yellow, a yellow sweatsuit. It looks plush. It's great. Latrell Sprewell's here? Okay.
Oh.
Man, this Knicks game is wild. Yeah, man. I think the improvements of DeMar, like, I think, we've given DeMar a hard time, probably on this podcast in previous seasons, and I don't think that, like, you know, anyone has to run from that, but, like, it always felt like DeMar was wearing pants too big for him, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Just the responsibilities given to DeMar and what DeMar was delivering within that, it's just been there's been a gap, right? But this year, it's like DeMar is so far in a way exceeded all that because he has improved, and all these reps have allowed him to become so much of a better player that this is the player that we've always wanted DeMar to be. I mean, like the 3-point shooting, right? Like in that Rockets game, he wasn't even scoring that well. I thought the Rockets did a pretty good job defensively against him.
Yep.
But because he hit three threes, he still had an efficient game. And that's one of the things with DeMar this year. It's just harder to stop him overall.
And right. It's not just that he did hit three of them. It's the fact that he took, I think it was seven or eight threes he attempted. Mm-hmm. And he's doing that without hesitation now, which means you have to close on him in a way that players didn't used to. Like, if the ball was being worked around and it got to him outside the three-point line, no one was just trying as hard as they could to take that line away from him. They were getting ready for him to drive. And that he immediately just shoots it without thinking now, and that he's putting up so many more attempts, mm-hmm. again, changes the way you have to guard him, because I think him shooting, what, like 33% on the season, 32% on the season, is not amazing. But him taking almost four attempts a game totally changes the way that you have to take away that space in the floor, which has opened up everything else for him as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And it's just nice to see it pay off. You know what I mean? Like, a homegrown superstar, not a superstar, but like pretty much close to.
I think he can stay superstar now. Like, he's.
Yeah. He's leading the number one team in the East. His stats are like right there with Kyrie Irving, if not better than. Like, scoring is right there, assists or maybe like one or two assists off, but like, you know, and everyone considers Kyrie a superstar.
For sure.
Yeah.
Oh, like some half a superstar is how visually appealing is what they do sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of sometimes been a knock against DeMar. It's like, well, it's not as flashy as like a Kyrie. And also, I mean, I think the other side of that is the criticism for someone like Kyrie is he's not as good as he is flashy. It's just the crazy plays. And look, both of those guys are superstars.
Yeah,
I think he's a superstar. I don't know how you can possibly argue otherwise. Like, his minutes are down. His stats are way up. His efficiencies are up. He's leading the team to a 60-win pace as the number one guy. Like, that's – can you think of a team who is the clear-cut – or sorry, a player who is the clear-cut number one guy on a team that won that many games who is not a superstar? Has there ever been that in the NBA?
Maybe, like, with the Hawks. But that was a very special situation.
But also, there was no one was clearly the number one player on that team, though.
That's true. That is true.
I don't think anyone even necessarily agrees on who the best player from that team was. Like, Al Horford, maybe?
Remember when they won player of the month for, like, their entire starting five?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that was the kind of thing. Like,
that was so disrespectful.
Yeah.
None of you guys are good enough to get this award. Here's five.
No, we have to combine you into some sort of Voltron-type thing for us to feel good enough about saying, yeah, you got it.
Yeah. No one was going to be like, Jeff Teague, yeah.
Yeah, no. They couldn't justify Kyle Korver. No one was willing to believe Jeff Teague. Yeah. I guess Paul Millsap may be the best player on that team, but again, it's not
maybe.
Clear, yeah.
Yeah.
DeMar's
a superstar. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Lowry, I don't think anyone's questioning that DeMar is the most important guy on this team right now.
Yeah, it's not close. It's not close. And yeah, I mean, look, I've been waiting for a while to drop this hot take, but this is a hot take I have.
Yes.
Okay? All right. In order to understand what the Raptors are right now, I think. It's more than just like DeRozan has been great, Kyle Lowry has been great in terms of transitioning to his new role and stepping up when necessary. Part of understanding the Raptors is just like how cohesive they are and how well they play basketball together as a team. Mm-hmm. And that goes for offensively and defensively. And the way the Raptors are playing right now, the team that they remind me of, and it might be blasphemous to say this, they kind of remind me of the 2013-2014 San Antonio Spurs.
Oof.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, from a culture perspective, I can see that. The Spurs were, that was Kawhi sort of establishing himself as a guy, but he was not the guy then. That was still the old Spurs carrying that unit.
Yeah, I agree. Look, obviously, like, in terms of the construct of the team is not like an easy fit because we don't have like three Hall of Famers and shit. But just in terms of the way they play together, it does remind me a lot of that Spurs team. Like, that Spurs team should not have been as good as it was defensively, right? Like, when you look up and down that roster, it wasn't like it was littered with elite defenders. It was just that they played together so well that they were able to stop a team like the Heat. And then, you know, offensively, that team would just move the ball beautifully, would get open threes, just all the time. And You know, you look up and down that roster, like, again, that team is built differently. There was no, like, DeMar for that team. There was no, like, Tim Duncan for the Raptors, right? But it just, in terms of the way they play together, it just, I don't know, I just get some of that Spurs vibe.
I see what you're saying. I think I agree in the sense of that's the team that most did the best job of getting everything out of their team. Mm-hmm. Like that, the 13-14 Spurs had, like, 99%. I got 99% of the best possible result they could get out of that team.
Yes, for sure.
If you run that simulation over again, 100 times, a million times, it's hard to imagine them doing any better than they actually did. And that's not because they were lucky. That's because they squeezed every ounce of efficiency out of each one of those players by playing like the best well-oiled machine type basketball I've ever seen. And I think that, yeah, I can agree with the machinery of how these two teams operate in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not worthwhile doing like a person for person comparison, but just the idea of a finely tuned machine operating night in, night out, just getting the most out of their players and not really playing anyone who sucks at anything.
Yes, that too. Like just like, having a roster where everyone can come in and play a role. Like that Spurs team, like that bench, right? Like you're bringing guys like, you know, Bellinelli off the bench, Boris Diaw was a big part of that team. Mm-hmm. I guess Siakam is the super skinny version of Boris Diaw.
Yeah, sure.
extremely skinny.
Slightly different body types, slightly different touch.
Yeah, but just the same versatility though. It's weird. People come in all shapes and sizes, but you know they get to the same goal. Van Vliet, I guess, as Patty Mills, like it's just I don't know, man. They just give me that vibe. And of course that team, you know, that team did special things. I'm not sure the Raptors will do that much, but I think what we've seen is if you're going to beat LeBron, you need like a really cohesive team, right? Sure. Think of the teams that have beaten LeBron. That 2011 Mavericks team was incredibly cohesive. Like before they even beat the LeBron, like they beat the Thunder, you know, they beat the Lakers. Like there was a lot of tough teams they beat along the way, a lot of future Hall of Famers. And the reason they did that wasn't because like the team was the most talented. It was because the team was the most cohesive. And as I say that, I just saw some great big-to-big passing from Poto to Siakam for a little floater. 7-0 run for the Raptors. They're not even trying and they're up, man.
Yeah,
Yo, the Knicks are trash.
It's LeBron. It's Poto to Siakam. That's it right there.
Yo, listen, I don't think LeBron can guard the two of them. I'm just going to say that right here. Oh, another assist between the two of them. That's three straight buckets. They got a tall timeout for Siakam and Poeltl.
Jeez. The Raptors bench unit, as a starting five,
mm-hmm.
could mop the floor with any tanking team. Which is, like, granted, yeah. like, there are nine teams in the league right now that are trying hard to lose, and, like, they're good at losing.
Yes.
So it's not saying all that much, but my point is not just that the Raptors bench as a starting five could beat them. It's that like they would mop the floor with them.
Yeah, easily. And like again, it's not about talent. It's not really about talent. It's about how you play as a team. And like as a team, we smack teams. Like if the Raptors starting five or bench unit, right? Like will we beat the Lakers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I don't think that's particularly close. And look, one of the reasons why the bench unit is going to be able to continue producing in the playoffs, I think, and one reason why they've been so good, is, you know, generally speaking, I'm not often a fan of the hockey style changes, like 5-for-5,
mm-hmm.
playing a full 5-man bench unit, because I think you're usually better off staggering your best players and having them play those minutes where they're always going to be featured in the offense. But the Raptors, Dwayne Casey has trusted this bench unit for so many minutes together at this point, that those guys can play a cohesive game together where, like you're talking about, there's legitimately passing chemistry between Siakam and Poeltl because they played so many NBA minutes together with the other guys. They know where they are, need to be on the floor. They know how to move the ball around. And that's uncommon for bench units. Most bench units are used to just trying to figure out how they can facilitate the game of the one or two scorers who are actually on the court. Not actually, and then like if they get a chance, look for their own, but it's like, oh, I gotta put up a shot, I don't know if I'll get it again. These guys are looking to just make the right basketball play. That's uncommon for a bench unit.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know what though? Like, the difference between this bench and the previous benches we've had is that this bench has like no ego whatsoever.
None, yeah, for sure. None.
It doesn't matter who takes the shot. It's not like Gervais Vasquez is like once, you know, like Gravis, like once every four possessions, he'll be like, I need this three. I just have to have it, right?
This one's for Gravis, yeah.
Yeah, or there's no John Salmons, there's no Lou Williams. There's not even Corey Joseph, who, like, you know, Corey Joseph would have tunnel vision sometimes. I thought Corey was overall great for the Raptors, but, you know, Corey would have tunnel vision once in a while and say, I need the shot, and I'll go to the basket, and, you know, something might happen, something might not happen. There's no selfishness with this bench whatsoever. Like, they all feel like they're on the same level, and, like, I think that's really, that goes back to the cohesion of the team.
Yeah.
Anyway. We've spent a solid amount of time praising this team. We are not going to criticize because there's nothing to criticize, honestly. They won 14 of 15. By the time this podcast comes out, it would be 15 of 16. Do you want to preview next week's games?
Let's do it.
All right. So the Raptors, assuming they beat the Knicks tonight, which hopefully they do, but, you know, it's early game in MSG, and I don't know. They look a little bit drunk. Who just dunked against them? I don't even know who these mans are. Like, who is... who is that on the Knicks? Anyway,
that's my favorite subplot of the Tankapalooza is as a guy who watches a lot of NBA games, tuning in and just being like, who the hell's on the floor right now? Like, who is this 10-day contract that just dunked on us? Exactly.
Yeah. Is he gonna dunk again? Ah, he missed a layup. unnamed player.
Sounds right.
CJ Miles. Anyway, Raptors play on Tuesday against the Brooklyn Nets on the road. We've had a hard time in Brooklyn of late. We'll keep that in mind. We had to go to overtime last time, and Kyle Lowry almost broke his ass in two.
That's true. The Brooklyn games tend to come inserted into road trips a lot. Like, that's just the reality of the dense Eastern corridor there. I wonder if that's playing a little bit of a role there.
Mm.
It's a combination of that and a game you don't tend to want to get yourself up for, but I think the Raptors know that they've got down these final stretch of games. They play Boston twice, they play Cleveland twice, and they also have games against, you know, the Thunder. And I think that they got to know, like, the games against the bad teams are must wins at this point. Like, you need to keep your foot on the throttle, and I don't foresee the Raptors kind of easing up in a way that they sometimes might have been prone to doing in the past.
Yeah. Especially since, you know what, it's kind of helpful that the Celtics have been so strong all throughout the season.
Sure. Yep.
Right? I mean, I don't want to see it personally, but, like, it's good for the Raptors to, like, you know, keep pace because, like, look at them, man. Like, they're still only, like, a game and a half back of us. Like, that's crazy. We've won so many games, and they're right there.
And Brooklyn is one of the teams that doesn't want to actually be as bad as they are right now, but everyone thought maybe they could be sneaky decent. Not good. No one thought Brooklyn would be good.
Mm-hmm.
But there was the chatter that the pick that the Cavs got in the Irving trade could end up being, you know, the eighth, ninth pick in the draft. Well, like, despite their efforts, Brooklyn has been just wash in the last month or so. Like, Dinwiddie, a couple other guys who had been playing really well for them have regressed a little bit, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Brooklyn's got, I think, two wins in their last, like, 12 games, something like that.
Yep.
Like, the 2018 has been traumatic for the Brooklyn Nets. They're getting outscored by a considerable margin. I have a hard time imagining the Raptors losing this game.
Yeah, me too. That's a win. Although they have spent now, that would be three straight days in New York.
Yep.
Because they're playing on the road tonight, and they don't play until Tuesday. So, I don't know. What's happening on Monday in New York anyway?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that if there's a game you're concerned about, it's coming off the Houston win and then having a daylight savings time, basically noon start in New York. That's the game that they probably don't necessarily show up for until midway through or until they've already kind of lost it. I think Tuesday you're kind of back into the grind.
Yeah, you're right. Thursday, the Raptors travel to Indiana to play the Pacers. The Pacers have given us kind of trouble. Like, they played us tough, but we haven't seen the Pacers since, like, December.
No, we've got two games against them down the stretch as well. We've not played them much.
Yeah, and you know what? The Pacers are a respectable team. They're definitely a team that's overachieving. Did you see this happen to Oladipo? Because I thought he was trash.
Yeah, no, I did not see Oladipo being this guy. This is, I mean, his numbers have started to slide down a lot. Like his shooting splits the last 2 months, I think, are sort of the result of the world coming back to its normal place. But he's still, like, he's a guy carrying a team that's fourth place. That's
impressive. Yeah.
He's been better this year than I kind of ever thought he would be offensively.
Because no one thought he could shoot like this. Like, he was hitting, like, pull-up jumpers, like, pull-up threes in transition. Like, that's just never been his game. And this year, he's hitting them at, like, a 40% clip. Or he was when he had that crazy hot start. He's come back a little bit, like you said, but...
He's still at, I think he's at 37% for the season, which...
That's good.
What's he attempting here? Like six threes a game? Like, that's great.
Yeah.
And a lot of those are guarded threes. He's not a super tall guy. He's been outstanding this year. I'm trying to find his per month stats here. Anyway, I know the numbers have been going down, and that makes sense because he was shooting a little bit better than he was able to. He was unbelievably good for a while, and also he's not got a lot of help coming there with Darren Collison and others also running the offense. Defenses are adjusting to that, and I think that's one reason why the Pacers are fourth, and besides Miami, I think the Pacers are the team that anyone in the East would choose to play if they could.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So, yeah, the Pacers are a legitimately reasonable NBA team. They're not bad. They're not someone who you should lose to if you play well.
Yeah, for sure. But do you think that's ultimately a win? With the way the Raptors are playing right now?
Yeah, I have a hard time seeing that being a loss. Like, they're one game away from a 15-game win streak right now, so like one bucket away from a 15-game win streak. It's hard to see them losing to anyone that's not on their level, and the Pacers are fine, but they're not on the Raptors' level.
That's actually crazy to think about. If the refs just called foul on JV's dunk in the Milwaukee game, we would literally be on a 15-game win streak. that's just good times for the Raptors. And then the Raptors close out the week with two games at home, Dallas on Friday, OKC on Sunday.
So, yeah, Dallas needs to be a win. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Dallas is very, very bad at basketball.
We did lose to them earlier this year, but that was a strange, very strange game. I think it won't be like that this time around.
No. And I don't think Dallas wants it to be like that either.
No.
Getting fined. What's the fine for Mark Cuban just saying what everyone is obviously aware of anyways? Was it like 500 grand?
Yeah, he's like...
It's in our best interest to lose?
Basically, yeah, he told his team during a team dinner, like, yo, we got to lose some games. And then Dirk was like, no, how dare you? I'm about to, like, you know, physically expire. Like, don't lose any more games, man. Like, don't take me for granted in my 21st season.
And ironically, if Mark Cuban had said that the world is flat, then the NBA league office's perspective is like, well, that's fine for him to say that. That's a reasonable thing to think. But him just saying the truth, we gotta tamp that down.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a win. And then the Thunder game. I mean, look, the Thunder game is going to be tough because, like, the Thunder is so physical. Like, it is hard to beat them on their best day. But the Thunder also just play, like, this ugly brand of isolation basketball, Westbrook basketball. And unless Westbrook is, like, really hot, like, that team sucks. That just kind of is what it is. Plus, it's a 1 p.m. game in Toronto for the road team. That's always tough. We got to factor that in.
Well, let me pull up the OKC schedule here and see where that fits in their overall trip. We've had a few Oklahoma City Thunder Sunday games. That seems to be they seem to play us. That's when Durant dropped 50 against us in a Sunday game.
That's true. That's the game where Westbrook, like last year, they creamed us. And Westbrook threw that full court, like bounce pass through Corey Joseph's legs.
That's true.
That was nasty.
What are the Thunder coming off here? So the Thunder, that's the first game of their road trip. Like, they've got a Friday night game at home and Sunday afternoon. Yeah, that's going to be a tough matchup. Like you said, they're so physical. Steven Adams is just so – he just looks like he's so much the complete – there's no fun to be had guarding Steven Adams is what I'm getting at.
None.
He's just going to bulldoze his way through places.
Yeah.
I don't know. It, like, the Raptors have nice depth at center to try to continue to combat that, but, I mean, Valanciunas will battle him. Pirtle's gonna get some minutes against him, and it'll be an, you know, that's a good learning opportunity. Pirtle is a great guy. Pirtle cannot physically handle Steven Adams.
No.
Which, you know, is not a knock on him.
Physically, no, it's not.
There's like 9 human beings in the world that can physically handle Steven Adams.
Yeah. And one of them is his sister. She's like a gold medal shot putter.
Yeah. He's got
Valerie Adams.
11 siblings, something crazy like that, and several of them are world-class athletes.
Yeah, they're not even a real-life family. They're more like a story you tell. Like a myth. Like a Greek myth. Look, the Raptors are playing so well. Do you want to just call it 4-0 a week? Let's just call it a 4-0 a week. Come on.
All right, sure. I'll call 4-0 a week.
Let's go. Man, that'd be crazy. The win streak would at that point be 12, so long as Raptors take care of business tonight against the Knicks. And the Raptors have started fucking around a little bit, so they're only up 4, but they'll pull this game out. Or rather, the Knicks will find a way to lose this game. Yep. Andrew, let's take a quick break. And let's come back on the other side. Let's take some Twitter questions.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers, and you know what makes me mad? When insurance companies deny your claim for no good reason. That's why people call me. I'm the lawyer insurance companies don't want to deal with. Visit GoldfingerLaw.com and get us working for you.
Welcome back to the second half of the podcast. Still here with Andrew. Andrew, are you hanging in there, health-wise?
I have not perished.
Okay.
I have not perished. The Raptors talk has nourished my soul, and I will continue. I will persevere.
That's good. That's good. I honestly, this whole season has been chicken noodle soup for the Raptors fan base. It's been so nice. Anyway, we're here to take questions before Andrew perishes. As always, hit us up on Raptors Republic, at Raptors Republic. You know the handle. Usually, there's a call for questions like a couple hours before the podcast. Today, I got really lazy and the time change and everything got me fucked up, so I only put it out at the start of this game. But there's still a lot of questions. So, first one comes from The Marvelous The Chosen. Who's a better player, Kyle or DeMar?
I think we spent a while talking about that. I think, like you said, like, look, Kyle, DeMar's never going to be as good defensively as Kyle, and there's a lot of ways that Kyle is reliable in a more important way, but I think this season, let's put it this way. I think DeMar DeRozan is making an All-NBA team this year. I don't think Kyle Lowry is.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like the division kind of happened last season. When Kyle went down, that was like, it kind of, not that it was a blessing, of course, like no injury is a blessing, but like, when Kyle went down, it really helped DeRozan's confidence in knowing that, like, he's like, yeah, I can do this.
For sure. On that point, like, is it reasonable to expect DeMar to be anywhere lower than second team All-NBA this year?
No. I think definitively he is second team All-NBA. He's not first team because, like, first team All-NBA for guards is impossible.
Yeah. Like James Harden is probably going to win the MVP. There's one guard spot right there.
Yeah.
And then for the other spot, you're competing with Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook.
Bro, I just seen Serge miss 4 shots in this one possession.
On the same possession? Like, not just bounce backs, but like...
Yeah, he missed a 3, he got the rebound, he missed a layup, and then he missed 2 tip-ins. The Raptors had 4 offensive rebounds on that one possession, and they still didn't score. They're really drunk, man.
Is Serge the player this year for you that most, like, that gets the quickest irrational response from you?
He's taking over for JV for sure.
Okay.
Because JV was like, if you let one person score on you pick and roll, I'm going to start flaming you on Twitter.
I was going to say, just based on my casual observance of the Will Lou Twitter game, I feel like Serge Ibaka is your new, I have a loose grip on reality when this guy has, like, I'm going to disproportionately respond negatively on Twitter to something he does.
You know what? It's just like, I give every player a amount of patience. But then, like, they get to earn more patience, and they get to, like, take away that patience, you know? And, like, Serge is just, like, that Pistons game was just, like, straight up unprofessional from Serge, man.
It wasn't great, man. It wasn't great.
I'm just like, yo, come on. If you didn't want to play, just tell Dwayne, like, listen, I need a game. Which, veterans can do that. It's completely in your right as a veteran to do that, but, man.
Let's put it this way. Like, Serge has become, like, your least trusted, you personally, your least trusted Raptor. Having said that, just whenever it gets to you, I want you to close your eyes and I want you to think about everyone else who has started a power forward over the last 4 years.
That's true.
You'll feel a little bit better.
Definitely. Look, the difference is at least Serge is capable, and we've seen Serge come through with many opportunities. Whereas we've literally never seen Tyler Hansbrough do any of this. Not that we have to compare it to Tyler Hansbrough, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
All right, next question from Eric Foreman. Who would be our preferred 1-8 matchup? Is it the Heat?
Good for Eric Foreman. I haven't seen him since that 70s show went off the air. It's nice to know that the fictional character is still out there.
He's never heard that joke before.
Yeah, exactly. You're welcome, Eric Foreman. I don't remember the question. I was too concerned with getting off my bad joke. Can you do that for me, please?
Who's the preferred 1-8 matchup?
I think Heat. I don't think there's any. I mean, the Heat. Heat's the no. The Pacers are not going to slide to 4 to 8 rather. And the other teams you're possibly looking at there realistically are the Bucks or the Sixers. Do you want to play anyone more than you would want to play the Heat, Will?
No. I just look. The Heat are going to be a tiring series. Like they play, they're really deep as a roster, so the Raptors bench won't have as many opportunities. And you know, they also just play incredibly hard, and Spoelstra gets the most out of that roster. But like, who on that team are you scared of? Like, who's the one guy? Like, the Raptors would for once have the best player in the series.
Yeah, I mean, the last time they had the best player in the series was the last time they played and beat the Heat.
The best player in the series was Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah. Well, the best player in the series was JV until he got hurt in that series. That was the 30-20 JV playoff experience.
Buddy, that honestly, for a while, it was with how JV looked last season, that three-game stretch was going to look like the Bargnani 13-game stretch for him. But JV has really turned it around. No more JV slander. He's shooting threes now. He's probably a better three-point shooter than Bargnani at this point.
Dude, you know, it's not unrealistic for JV to join the 50-40-90 club.
Yes, that's not talked about enough. He's currently there, right? Or he has to get a couple more free throws in.
He's got to go up from like 88.2 to 90%, and he's 50-40-90. And he's starting to get the volume of threes up to the point where it's like, it's not slanderous to put him in there. Like, that's preposterous.
Yeah. JV's become the player we want him to be, man. He's even better on defense. Like, that Rockets game?
Yeah, that's the best defensive game I've ever seen him play. Like, the way he was just so naturally sliding into the right place on the pick and roll and helping and covering and switching to take away the drive to the outside and then falling back to his man, the steal of the block. I've never just seen him play so confidently defensively and while doing the right thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's neat.
Yeah, I think the Raptors would have like the best three players in that series.
Yeah. Against the Heat. The Heat, and by the way, Dwayne Wade suddenly taking 20 shots a game for the not helpful for them. Like, that's I think that no one in Miami thinks this team is actually going anywhere, and they just think it's nice to have Dwayne Wade back so they don't mind watching these 20 shots, but the team is not better. They're better every once in a while when he bails out their second unit or gives them they were struggling to get shots at the end of games, and he can do that for you. Mm-hmm. But he's also going to take those shots that are a struggle to get 15 to 16 times a game, and that's not helpful. So,
Dwayne Wade, is his usage right now in Miami, 32%.
Yeah. Look, it's worth noting that Dwayne Wade is one of, like, the 30 greatest players of all time.
Yeah, I love Dwayne Wade.
Dwayne Wade was my favorite non-Raptors player in the league for a long time.
Yeah, for sure.
That man is dead.
Yeah, dude, his usage is 32%. His true shooting percentage is 49%. Dwayne. Come on, Dwayne. just know yourself, that's all. That's all I'm just saying. Know yourself. You're old. I mean, whatever. He's doing like great stuff off the court and stuff like that, and obviously the Heat fans love it that he's back.
Yeah.
This is how the Vince Carter story could have ended for the Raptors. He could have came back and decided to take every shot for the bench.
For sure. Yeah.
Man. All right. Yeah, give me the Heat. I don't want Sixers. I don't want the Bucks. That's just annoying. Next one from Josh. top five worst jerseys in the NBA. So that'd be bottom five jerseys in the NBA.
Sure.
Top five worst is weird. The Thunder. The Thunder consistently have terrible jerseys, in my opinion.
Thunder probably have the worst jerseys. Like, they're just, they're bad colors, they're cartoons. Mm-hmm. They seem like they came from the same place that those Raptors, Grizzlies, 90s bullshits came from.
But the color scheme is bad.
Yeah, like, it's just, yeah, they're terrible.
They have the same color scheme as Tide. Like, that orange, that light blue. Like,
yeah. They've gotten rid of those just straight-up orange road jerseys, right? That's gone?
Yeah. Those are awful. What happened? Did Serge get another fight with Michael Beasley? No, what? Serge, bro, you can't do this every game, man. It's just a rebound, and they're going for... And they're fighting now.
Look, Serge is working through some shit, man. I think he needs to talk to someone. Or he just needs to actually hit someone.
Yes. Yeah. He just wants to get one punch in. Like, a real punch. Jeez, Serge, stop fighting people, man.
You know what the thing is? Like Serge, someone should just be like, look, Serge, if you want to fight someone, that's fine. You know? But pick your spots. Like, Michael Beasley is not worthy of you in this way. Like have some respect. It's like when you're stopping... You're like, look, you have a friend who is just taking someone home, and, you know, like, look, I get that, you know, you just need someone right now, but, like, you can do better than this, man. You can do better.
Yeah. No, why, honestly, though, Serge, like, come on, man. Also, like, the thing is with Serge is no one really buys him as a true badass. Cause, like, if you're gonna be an enforcer, people have to, like, not try you. And people try Serge all the time.
Which is crazy, by the way. Like, just looking at people I would least like to be punched by, Serge is high on that list.
Yes, for sure.
And, like, and he is willing to throw that punch. So why do people keep trying him? Like, is he just pissed them off? Because, look, a guy like that, if that body is willing to throw its fist at you, you should not encourage it to do so.
Yeah.
Like, that's a simple, simple equation.
Yeah, for sure.
Also, Michael Beasley's insane. Ooh. So.
Oh, that too. I kind of like Beasley, though. I like his story. Oh, Serge just got a huge block. There you go. Made up for it. All right. So I'm looking at a picture there. Oh, the Hawks. Do you like the Hawks jerseys?
I do not. Every once in a while, they have, like, one third jersey that's not terrible.
Yeah.
Which I will also say about the Timberwolves. I like one of those weird Timberwolves jerseys this year. Otherwise, the Timberwolves have had trash jerseys the entire time they've existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Phoenix's jersey has really fallen off.
Their old school jersey is great. I do love that, like, just the MS-DOS basketball.
Yeah.
But
their new one is...
The new one's not great.
I think it's just part of it is just, like, the franchise has fallen into disarray as well.
Yeah, they don't... They just do not seem like a quality organization.
Yeah. Oh, the Clippers?
The Clippers jerseys are bad.
Yeah.
The word art jerseys.
Yeah.
Very Microsoft. The redo this year was a little bit better. Like, I didn't hate what they did. They were starting from a bad place and they didn't get a lot warmer.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Who's the next worst jerseys?
Probably Orlando. I mean, yeah. It depends. Do you like the pinstripe? Cause, like, for a while that pinstripe jersey was, like, kind of a look, but.
Like, I like the pinstripe jersey because I love Penny Hardaway as a kid.
Yes. But that's, like, a long... I mean, not to call you old, but that's a long time ago that Penny Hardaway played in the league.
It is a long time ago, man. That's 20 years ago. 20-plus years ago. I think the further you get away from the Penny Hardaway shoe commercials and the little penny,
mm-hmm.
the worse those jerseys seem.
Yeah, for sure.
You used to see people in Shaq Orlando jerseys all the time when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
It doesn't happen because you would never see someone wearing an Orlando Magic jersey now. But if you saw someone wearing an Orlando Magic jersey, you'd be like, what? Like, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. You'd have to go ask them about it. You'd be so fascinated. It'd be like seeing someone listen to, like, a cassette Walkman. You would go and ask because you'd have questions.
Yeah, it's exactly like that. You're like, what are you doing? What is that? Is that Jonathan Isaac?
That's true. The Orlando Magic are playing every single game with Sony Walkmans on.
Yes. Yeah. It's a good analogy for where they are.
All right. If that's not five, that's going to be close enough to five that we can probably...
That's five pretty bad ones. Next one for Felix. Does having playoff norm matter? What role would he have in the playoffs given that we already have OG, assuming healthy, and CJ? Is norm just injury insurance?
I mean, he's not just injury insurance, but he's depth. You know, if he comes off the bench and can actually hit threes, then huge. If Ananobi and Miles are playing well, he probably doesn't see the floor. I mean, like Van Vliet has taken all of his minutes and earned every single one of them.
Yeah, if we're talking about shortening the rotation in the playoffs, that means we're taking out some of our lesser performing players, and that's norm.
Yeah, like, look, if Norm gets things back together, like, it, by all accounts, it just seems like he's in his head in some way.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And that's, you see that with the body language, you see that how every time Casey takes him out of the game, he seems to try to pull him aside and help boost him up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really positive Casey thing that he learned in the Terry Ross saga is,
okay, look,
I'm going to need this guy. I should actually be trying to build him up instead of just pulling him out of the game in anger at him.
Mm-hmm.
But
which, to be fair, like, Terrence Ross is an anger-inducing player.
Sure, sure. Yeah. But he was also a necessary component of the team at the time, so it wasn't helpful to the team's long-term success to just be frustrated with him.
Yeah, that's fair.
And that's, again, another way that Casey has become a better coach.
Yeah, he's playing all these young guys, man.
Yeah, he's playing all of them, he's trusting them, and he's trying to nurture them instead of just yanking them for John Salmons.
John Salmons, baby, the ultimate security, or Alan Anderson, that was the ultimate security blanket.
And
anytime anything happened, Dwayne Casey's like, nah, I gotta call time, I'll get Alan Anderson in the game.
Yeah, in there, come on.
Alan, get in there with your pug-looking face and just shoot like five shots in 2 minutes.
Man, I had a moment with Alan Anderson once. We gave each other the nod. It was like he was with his family. I could tell he didn't want to be bothered. And I just sort of like gave him the nod, like, hey, man, what's up? And he was just like, hey, thanks for not drawing attention to me. I'm going to lean against the back of this restaurant wall. It's my Alan Anderson story. That was the most positive experience I had with him as a Raptor.
That's a good story. That's probably the best Alan Anderson story people have.
Yeah, like he had a big game winner in some regular season game at one point.
Sure. Probably didn't mean much, but, I mean, it doesn't matter.
No, that was before we were used to winning a lot of games, so, like, any random win was a bigger deal.
Yeah, for sure.
I think Norm is depth. And that's,
Norm is depth, yeah. He's injury insurance. Felix, you said it right there in your tweet, man.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not a guarantee that OG comes back and, like, is able to hold up in the playoffs, you know? So it's nice to have someone like Norm around.
Yeah, and by the way, it wouldn't be a surprise if Norm played really well in the playoffs either, so.
Yeah, he's got a track record.
Yep.
Next one from Brandon. Which was the better poster, DeMar on Tolliver or DeMar over Rudy? That's Gobert. Sorry.
Yeah.
When I see Rudy and DeMar, I think, like, Gay.
It, like, also, Gay is probably the best defensive player in the NBA, and he's...
Oh, it was Rudy Gobert, yeah.
Sorry, Gobert, yeah. Gobert, yeah. So, no. Yep, I did. Got my Rudy's confused there.
Yeah.
Yep. No, I agree with you, though.
DeMar on Tolliver? Or wait, hold on. Which one are you saying?
You know, I think I like the Tolliver one more now that I'm thinking about it. My favorite part about the Tolliver dunk is actually, have you seen the full clip where the fan in the Red Wings jersey in the crowd?
Oh, yeah. He just dies?
Like, that guy takes off his Red Wings sweater and buys a DeMar jersey on the way out of the arena that night.
Yeah. No, he's just shirtless at the concession stand being like, give me a DeMar DeRozan jersey. Yeah. And they're like, sir, we don't have it. We don't serve customers.
Next time he goes back to Detroit is going to be in 2019 when Masai does the bus trip with the fans and he's going to be on the damn bus.
Yeah. No, we converted him. We converted him at the time.
For sure. He's a true believer now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's we've had a lot of good DeMar dunks, man. We really take that for granted. Like DeMar and Carl Singler.
One of the best dunkers of the last 10 years.
Oh, easily. Okay, I think the better question here, Andrew, is DeMar versus Tolliver or DeMar versus the Bucks in Game 6? Because I got to go with the Bucks game. Because
yeah.
Not only because, like, the context, obviously, it's a Bucks game, it's an elimination game, but the Raptors had been struggling all of that fourth quarter. Remember how they blew, like, a 30-point lead?
Yeah,
because like, Jason Terry kept hitting threes.
I remember just nervous vomiting all through that game.
I was dying, man. I was dying. I've never felt that bad about a playoff win.
No, like there were panic attacks across all of Ontario.
Yeah.
Just everyone losing their mind.
And that's when DeMar took over, and he's like, all right, I'm just going to put the city on my back. I'm just going to drive out of the corner, drive around Thon Maker, drive around Jason Terry, and then dunk on Giannis.
Yeah. In hindsight, until he got to Giannis, not the two best defensive players in the world, but, you know.
Oh, shit. Thon Maker was playing like a maniac against us, though.
He was against us, which, like, again, like, not a part of that playoff series that has aged well at all, as Thon Maker looks like a not NBA player this season.
Yeah, that's true.
By the way, the Bucks look worse this year than they did in that series. Somehow. Which is very...
Yeah, and they fired Jason Kidd. They didn't change much of what's happening with them. But,
no. Like, I was at the New Year's Day game.
That was fun. That's a good game to go.
Yeah, fun game. And, like, the underreported part of that game is that they didn't run a single play for Giannis in, like, the last two minutes of overtime.
Like, yeah, that's true, actually.
They have one of the best players in the world, and they're like, look, let's go away from him down the stretch of this overtime game as we watch some other player just go to another level.
There's too much Eric Bledsoe. That's one of my theories. There's too much Eric Bledsoe.
A lot of Chris Middleton.
A lot of Chris Middleton, man.
Middleton is good, but he's not as good as we kind of thought he was when he was the best player on that team 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Yeah, it turns out the best player on a team that won 15 games is not that good.
Yeah, no, like he's...
Yeah.
He's a good NBA player who is not quite as good as he was after a catastrophic injury, and he's not the third best player on his own team.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I think he's the third best player.
Probably, like, all around. He's the third best scorer on that team. Like Jabari is just better at getting a bucket than he is.
I agree. Although I feel like Middleton fits more context. Like, he can get a bucket in more context than... Well, even not even that. I don't know. Well, a healthy Jabari is really good. Yeah, like, he just hasn't been there. He's had two ACL tears.
Before he hurt that knee last year, like, Jabari could get buckets on anybody.
Yeah. He was a bit Melo-esque, man.
Yeah. Like, he was putting up a very quiet, like, 23-24 game last year.
On, like, less than 30 minutes. So yeah. that's you gotta really come in the game and get your buckets. But, yeah, the Bucks, man. I still don't want to face the Bucks, but yeah, they're definitely less than the sum of their parts. We'll say that much.
For sure. If the Raptors are getting everything they can out of their team, the Bucks are arguably getting the least they could possibly be getting out of their lineup.
Yeah. Okay. We already took this question earlier from Patrick. We touched on it, like, any parallels between this team and the 60-win Hawks. We already compared it. So let's just end here from Darren. Will Serge at the 5 be something we actually see in the playoffs, or will Jonas and Jakob's defensive improvements make that less relevant?
I think that's massive dependent. I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, let's say more nice things about Dwayne Casey is that, you know what, this year, when JV has been feeling it, he's let him play. When JV, like, there was a, I don't remember what team it was against, it was like last week there was a game where JV was just obviously not the right matchup, and he just pulled him out and put Poeltl in early. Poeltl played better, and he just rode Poeltl out. Like, that, you'll see that happen, I think. I think if the Raptors need to go to a lineup with Serge at the 5 and it's working, they'll do that. Like, I don't anticipate Casey being blockheaded about lineups at all.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. He's been a lot more flexible. And I think the one thing with Serge, though, is that, like, if we're talking about the mobile type of defensive presence needed at center, like, Poeltl has been so good on that perspective that, like, it's not like Serge is the obvious choice there, even though Serge is pretty good in those scenarios. And then if we're talking about, like, a physical presence, then it's there's no contest. It's JV. Yep. So, like, the actual scenarios in which you need Serge is, like, if you want to make a comeback, and I guess you need some threes. Although, if you want to make a comeback, I'd argue you've got to get JV in there because he's our best interior scorer.
Yeah, and if you want to get a comeback going, like, the importance of offensive rebounds is greatly undervalued in as far as coming back from behind goes. So
yeah,
I mean, like, look, Serge is going to play a lot of minutes in the playoffs, but Serge and JV and Poeltl are kind of all averaging 20, like, 18 between the three of them, 18 to 26 minutes a game, and that's probably what you're going to see.
And I think that's probably why, like, they've all been a little bit better on defense, right? Like, the Raptors have gotten great defense from the centers is because none of them have to play that big of a role. Like, they're all individually, they get to share it.
they're all playing with full gas tanks all the time, and that's super important.
Yeah. There you go. Andrew.
William.
It's been too long, buddy.
It's been a delight.
It's been a delight. I hope you feel better, man.
Thank you. It's been great catching up with you and chatting about this basketball team of ours.
Yeah. Damn, we're good.
You mean the Raptors also, not bad.
Oh, man.
That sounded too, like, you said that like you had just lit a cigarette after sex. Just like,
that's honestly how these games feel, man. Like that after that Pistons game, I was like, I don't even smoke, man. But I mean, shit.
Yep.
So damn good. Anyway.
All right, let's win 4 games. Let's light another cigarette.
Let's do it. Thank you to everyone for listening to the podcast, and we'll be back next week to, you know, pontificate more about how orgasmic it is to watch the Raptors play. All right, that's enough. All right, peace.
All right, man. Take care.